probably a better title to this message. I just haven't found it yet, but when I do, I'll let you know. So, it's been said that complaining is like bad breath. You notice it when it comes out of somebody else's mouth and not your own. Sadly, complaining has become a somewhat deep-seated part of our society. It's like we feel very entitled to complain. We seem to need to do it so deeply that we frequently do it to our own detriment. Like the man who robbed a Wendy's in Atlanta, who was so put off by his skimpy haul that he called the restaurant twice to voice his disapproval. Which, frankly, is much better than what police say author Bundridge did. Bundridge approached a Syracuse, New York bank teller and demanded $20,000. When he got home, he discovered that he had been shortchanged. Outraged, he stormed back to the bank to tell them what he thought about their service. Not surprisingly, that's when he was arrested. The truth is, nobody likes a complainer except perhaps other complainers. I mean, how do you feel when somebody dumps all of their problems and complaints on you? In general, it's not a very positive or energizing experience, is it? Maya Angelou, the famous African-American poet and author, tells us that from the age of 3 until 7, she was raised by her grandmother, and it was a period of calm and stability in what would end up being a very traumatic childhood. See, her grandmother now ran a general store. And one thing that truly bothered her was people complaining. They complain about the heat, the cold, myriad of other issues that Maya's grandmother thought of as, well, as trivial. And according to Maya, whenever that happened in the store, her grandmother would wait until the complainer left the store, call Maya over to her and say, "Sister, did you hear what brother so-and-so or sister much to do complained about? Sister, there are people who went to sleep all over the world last night, poor and rich and white and black, but they'll never wake again. And those dead folks would give anything at all for just 5 minutes of this weather that person was grumbling about. So you watch yourself about complaining, sister. What you're supposed to do when you don't like the way a thing is change it. And if you can't change it, change the way you think about it. Don't complain." Of course, all of us complain at one time or another. I suppose that the important questions are, how often do you complain and what do you complain about? If you're wondering whether you complain too much, just ask your friends, relatives, or coworkers. They will let you know. And if you complain too frequently, well, trust me, they will know. Like I said, it's not just a question about frequency of complaining. It's also a question about what you complain about. You see, when I'm talking about complaining today, I'm not talking about those times you discuss your problems in an attempt to find solutions. Depending on how you do it, that's actually mostly constructive. And I'm also not referring to those times when you share your experiences, including disappointments, with your friends or with your relatives in the context of bringing them up to date on the latest developments in your own life. After all, part of being human is sharing our experiences and supporting each other. And finally, I'm also not talking about the times that you register a complaint with a person or an organization in order to fix some problem that they may have created. Taking a positive action and speaking up is one of the ways that we do impact change. But that's talking about a solution-oriented approach to the injustices that we come across in day-to-day life. We must remember that. We'll never be able to change the weather, or the traffic, or the Wi-Fi speed. And in many cases, other people's opinions and behavior. So we can save a lot of time and a lot of grief by just letting that kind of stuff go. I'm talking about the kind of complaining that's counterproductive. For instance, one of the most common areas of complaint is the subject of illness. In the category are comments such as, my back's killing me, or I'm having terrible stomach cramps, or even worse, some people graphically explain the gory details of their particular ailment, something like, I have this mucousy green stuff that's coming. Folks, unless I'm a doctor, I don't need to know about that. The bottom line is some complaining is normal when it comes to things that can be changed. But the operative word in that sentence is some. Some complaining is normal. Let's take a biological look at what happens when you complain a lot. Throughout your brain, there are these connections and synapses separated by this empty space called the synaptic cleft. Now, whenever you have a thought, one of these synapses shoots a chemical across the cleft to another synapse, building a sort of bridge over the cleft. And when it carries the charge representing the particular information that you're thinking about, it makes that full connection. Now, here's the kicker, though. Every time that electrical charge is triggered, the synapses actually move closer together in order to decrease the distance that the electrical charge has to cross. It's basically a sort of microcosmic example of adaptation and evolution. So the brain is constantly rewiring its own circuitry, physically changing itself to make it easier and more likely that the proper synapses will share the chemical link and thus spark together. Basically, it makes it easier for the thought to trigger the next time and then the next time and the next. I think you get the point. What I'm getting at is this. Your thoughts literally reshape your brains. Let that sink in for just a minute. Your thoughts literally reshape your brains. They're constantly, physically changing the construct of your brain. Carol decided she wanted to do something for her new neighbor, Mrs. Smith, so she baked an apple pie and carried it next door. When Mrs. Smith opened the door, she was surprised to see her new neighbor holding a pie. She replied, oh, for me? Thank you very much. How did you know how much I like that? I appreciate it. You're thoughtful. Thank you so much. Now, because Mrs. Smith liked the pie so much, Carol decided the next week to bake her another one. When she took it over, Mrs. Smith opened the door and again said, thank you so much. You're so kind. And Carol took another pie over the following week, and Mrs. Smith replied, thanks, Carol. Took another week, and Mrs. Smith responded again, thank you so much. And she brought one over the next week, and Mrs. Smith said, you realize you're a day late with that pie. The next week, Carol baked her another pie. This time, the neighbor said, try using a little less sugar. Don't bake it for quite so long. The crust has been a little hard recently. And by the way, I like cherry instead of apple. Next week, Carol was so busy she was unable to cook for her neighbor. And when Carol passed by her house on the way to the store, Miss Smith looked through the window and noticed that she wasn't carrying a pie. She stuck her head out the window and yelled, hey, where's my pie? Now, that's a cute and somewhat overly simplistic understanding of the outfall of our thoughts reshaping our brains. So the more we think about something, positive or negative, the more it becomes your constant reality. If you complain a lot, it physically becomes easier for your brain to default to complaining in any given situation. You see, the synapses that you've most strongly bonded together by thinking about them more frequently come to represent your default personality. your intelligence, your skills, your aptitudes, and mostly your most easily acceptable thoughts, which is what you default to in day-to-day conversation. The Buddhists say that the universe is suffering. And when we try to force our personal desires on it, we're likely to frequently find that the universe is decidedly less than interested in what we want. Buddhists would tell us that pushing against the immovable is a practice in futility. Raging against reality is a spiraling path to madness. So the Buddhists also then speak of acceptance with a capital A. Accepting the natural flow of reality with an optimistic love. To say to every moment that comes your way, good or bad, thank you for the experience of this lesson. And now bring the next moment so that I can give it the same love. Doing so will move synapses representing joy and love and appreciation closer and closer together, to the point where any synapses in your brain associated with sadness, regret, pessimism, fear, desire, melancholy, depression, all of those, have a smaller and smaller chance of being triggered before the synapses of joy, of love, of appreciation. And over time, this means that your default state becomes one of optimism and one of appreciation, and the burdens that we frequently associate with life and existence, well, they're lessened. Now, mind you, this is not about reacting to all things with full love and full appreciation. This is not to say that social injustices should not be challenged. As a Buddhist teacher and author Tara Branch says, acceptance means recognizing the truth of this moment without resistance, recognizing the truth of the moment. The fourth of 14 mindfulness trainings in the Zen Buddhist tradition of Thich Nhat Hanh is this: aware that looking deeply at the nature of suffering can help us develop compassion and find ways out of suffering, we are determined not to avoid or close our eyes before suffering. We are committed to finding ways, including personal contact, images, and sound, to be with those who suffer so we can understand their situation deeply and help them transform their suffering into compassion, into peace, and joy. Reacting initially with love and compassion does not mean that you do not recognize the truth of a moment. It means that you will not let that moment control you. It means that you will not let your programming lead to a knee-jerk negative reaction. It means you don't needlessly complain. You begin from a point of positivity, which not only puts you in a better state of mind for addressing the problem, but it also has the added benefit of impacting your health positively, even extending your life. Being more positive actually puts us in a place that reduces how much reality can bully around our emotions. Reducing those negative emotions in our lives actually make our lives healthier and happier and longer. So the good news is this: we are the masters of our minds. Our words, our thoughts literally shape our minds and influence how we handle any given situation. It takes time, it takes consistency, it takes mindfulness, and it may even take some meditation. But we have the tools that it takes. And all we have to do is choose to use those tools. This is your opportunity to respond to the theme or to the message for today. Is there anyone who has thoughts they want to share with your community? Anthony.
Hi, I'm Anthony. I have to admit, I'm really confused. I'm really... This message stimulates me very strongly, but more in confusion than anything. What's the difference for me? I just have to, I don't understand, what is the difference between a complaint and someone expressing an unmet need? And who gets to decide what speech is a complaint and what speech is I'm expressing my unmet need? What you've described to me sounds like a system of oppression and control, where the person who decides what a complaint is then can block people from expressing their unmet needs. I wish there was a way to talk about positivity and negativity without that word complaint, because with that evaluation embedded into it, it sets up a power structure. And I don't, to me, maybe you could talk a little bit more about that.
Sure. No, I think the point of complaint was a complaint in this particular case, as I tried to lay it out as I began, is when you are expressing negatively about something to someone about something that they can't change or do anything about. And the real point was to stop beginning our addressing of a moment in our lives from a negative, somewhat complaining standpoint. Instead, kind of thinking of the Buddhist understanding of acceptance, to accept it as a moment in life, come from a perspective of love and compassion. That's not to say that you don't ultimately recognize that there's something wrong with it, but the idea is that we start from a more positive point and not from the negative. And the complaint is when you're consistently talking about something that you, that the people you're talking to about have no opportunity to change it, with, as I pointed out, the exceptions of, you know, family and friends want to know what your trip was like or what life has been like since they've seen you. They want those updates. It's all about a perspective in life. At least that's what I was trying to communicate, which is why I brought in the Buddhist perspective and tried to lay out at the beginning of it the difference between what a complaint is and what things that we just do in life that's natural and normal.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. I'd also like an authenticity piece in that, too, so that people can... that there's a way to speak their truth without making the listener shut down emotionally. I think that's something that would help. I like the idea of positivity, but I guess I just want an environment where all voices can be heard and there's a mechanism for that.
Well, you also have to consider what's healthy as well. I mean, there are times when all voices being heard makes the people around them hurt, and that's not healthy. So there's a balance between the two, I think. But, I mean, all voices should be heard. The question is, if you're one of the voices, is what you're doing being helpful to anyone besides yourself? Not that it's not bad to help yourself when to do things that are helpful to yourself when you're surrounded by people who care and love about you. That's certainly a good thing.
And I think I understand, too, what you're saying, because I know that there are some people who I probably would not complain to, because I know that their ears would close down because they live in this world, in this thought world, where my complaint to them is not an opportunity. They don't see it as an opportunity for help being me, but they see it as something that they should make ice cream about. You know, they should make it pretty and flowery. And so I know when I'm sick, there are some people I'm just not going to call, you know, because of the pretty and flowery kinds of things that they, of their personalities. And I'm just needing someone to listen to me and just be a soundboard.
Mark, when you're talking about criticism and complaint, I thought about, as an alternative, feedback, constructive feedback. But it seems in order to do that, you have to, as Gracia said, find the right people who can be receptive to constructive feedback and not consider it a complaint coming back. Hard to find.
It makes me wonder, off the top of my head, does the difference between criticism and complaint and feedback, does it originate in this, what it starts from? Does it start from frustration and anger? Does it start from love and acceptance and trying to make things better?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe that helps delineate where it arrives.
Mm-hmm. And again, your audience. I know that I could have constructive feedback with Gracia because I know you and trust you. Long experience in here, but maybe there are other people that I would not be able to say certain things.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that reminds me of my brother who has had multiple sclerosis for 50 years or whatever, legs amputated. And when I mentioned something to my aunt who was older and babysat him and knows him more, she said, "He can't walk?" So some people you just know to communicate to, and others you don't.
Hi, I'm Rebecca. I'm really appreciating all of the different dialogue. And a memory just popped in my head of, because I work as a business analyst, and I try very hard to make sure that things happen in a way that pleases the customer. So therefore, when I go into a store or something like that, I expect, you know, the same type of service that I would try to receive, give to a customer, and it doesn't always work that way. And then I feel, you know, in some cases that it may be helpful to point out, you know, when I may be disappointed with, you know, a customer service at a place. And I was telling this to a cashier at a store recently about, you know, how I was disappointed. And she got very upset with me and told me that I didn't have to be so rude. And I was like, well, what have I done that's been rude? And she was like, you know, basically, you know, indicated that by expressing my disappointment, I was being rude. And so there's just so many different perceptions, you know, kind of going back to what you were saying and what you were saying, you know, I guess everyone just sees the world through their own lens. And so what may be one person trying to create positive change, you know, that's seen by one person as a complaint or, you know, being rude or this type of thing. So just sort of more food for thought.
Elsie had.
Good morning, I'm Elsie. Thank you, Anne. I mean, I think the thought of unmet needs is a very helpful introduction into this, though the main thing that I got is to try to think about my own brain. I'm not trying to do anything about how someone else is living, but what am I reinforcing? And it's even helpful to think about if I'm complaining about something over and over, what is my unmet need? Because that isn't the pathway that I want to reinforce. I want to find a way to find another pathway that has a better result for me.
Yeah, great point. Are there others?
Complaining is okay. There was a lady on the United Airlines. Did y'all hear that story? It was this week. Who she had paid $1,000 for her child's ticket and whatever the price of her ticket was. And she had a child that was small enough to put on her lap, but she paid for a seat. And the flight attendant came and took the seat and gave it to a standby passenger. And because, what was that you said about how the mind works? You know, you be in this loop.
Yep.
Because she was a non-complainer, would not be me. then she didn't say anything to the flight attendant. You know, she just let that child be on her lap for 16 hours or however long that flight was, even though she paid $1,000 for the seat. And when she got off the plane and said something to the gate agent said, "Well, why didn't you say something?" Any other comments? Things you feel like you want to say?
Turn it back over.
Well, thank you so much for your feedback.